Okay, people, so we are back with more of our Dances with Films coverage, and today we have a film that is actually the last film, well, the last of the films we're covering, playing in the festival. It is Katie's Mum, right? Which, has its premiere on Sunday, right? The 2nd of July. It will be at 2:45 p.m. at the TCL Chinese Theatre. So, people, let's get it popping. Okay, people, so Katie's Mum is the new film from Tyrell. I think that's how you say her name. Tyrell Schaffner. She co-wrote it with Meryl Branch McTierman. The film is then produced by Tierman, Schaffner, and Corey Moss. It's executive produced by Jimmy V, Sanjay M. Sharma, Kristen T. Higgins, Milan Chakraborty. It's co-produced by Colin Bates and associate produced by Joe Croty and Leandro Zelinsky Mayer. Cinematography is handled by Akash Raj. Daniel Martins edits the piece. Cara Sullivan handles casting. Coca Regal, costume design. Sarah Dulcey handles makeup. And our cast, well, Dana Myers plays Nancy. Her daughter Katie is played by Julie Tolshin. Her son Eli is played by Colin Bates. You've got her ex-husband Malty, played by Jason Wiles, and his new, I'm not sure if they're married, let's say partner, Evelyn, is played by Shannon D. And then there's Alex, Katie's boyfriend, played by Aaron Dominguez. You've got Jeff, a love interest, played by Rib Hills. Professor Branch, played by Nicola Lambeau. Dr. Tanner, played by Christine Weatherfrup. Lindsay, played by Lexi Stevenson. Sue, played by Clara York. Rosa Bala, played by Jade Ramirez. Ben is played by Chris Molica. CJ, Joanna Kay. Mr. Croty, played by Joe Croty. And I said that's probably the main gist of things. And okay, let's get to the synopsis. What is this film about, you ask? Well, people, it is, hold on, I have lost myself, it would seem. Dum, dum, dum. Where the fuck am I? Gosh. This is, dum, dum, dum. Okay. Okay, so a recent divorce's holiday celebration with her adult children derails when she falls for her daughter's charming new boyfriend. It's a comedy influenced by The Graduate, told from the perspective of a protagonist inspired by Mrs. Robinson. So I think that tells you a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Terrell Shafner has a director's statement, right? Which says, classic comedies often feature difficult men behaving badly. Jack Nicholson, Bill Murray, Seth Rogen have all played flawed but beloved romantic heroes. But can an audience empathize with a woman who made the ultimate betrayal? A mother who slept with her daughter's boyfriend? I say the answer is yes. As a woman in her early 40s, who has engaged in compulsive relationships with the wrong men and struggled to break free, I know the war between desire and common sense, or as I like to call it, the battle between the head, the heart, and the vagina, is ripe for drama. And I'm excited for the audience to explore this struggle from a woman's point of view on screen in Katie's Mum. Katie's Mum was inspired by the co-writer's ex-boyfriend who had an affair with a recently divorced mother while simultaneously dating her college-age daughter. His illicit affair went on for several years, unbeknownst to his young girlfriend at the time. This love triangle represented the most extreme example of that battle between logic and passion, something I was drawn to explore on screen. So, yeah, there you go. Now, I think, right, the big thing here for me, you know what I mean? Listen, regardless of sex, you know what I mean? Like, this could be a dude sleeping with his, yeah, boyfriend's daughter. I was like, wait, which way around would it be? A dude sleeping with his boyfriend's daughter. His daughter. God damn it. Dude sleeping with his son's girlfriend, right? Even his boyfriend's, even with his son's boyfriend. You know what I mean? Even if you did it that way around, it's still fucked up. You know what I mean? It's just like, yo, regardless of the gender, right? Which parent did the thing? Still not a good thing to be doing. You know what I mean? Because look, you can have people acting all over the place. And yeah, we've definitely seen that. I mean, I would definitely, I don't know. The Seth Rogen, now, maybe there's a film I've missed, but his characters were usually stoners, right? Like the dude that hasn't quite got his shit together. You know, but then gets his shit together, like in Knocked Up, right? That's usually that character rather than someone just going out every night, like hitting mad chicks, all of that shenanigans, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'm like, listen, a character can be, you know, a little crazy, but yeah, anyone doing some straight grime, it is hard to like. It's hard to like. That doesn't say you won't like the story. Like, the story isn't told well. But I feel there's lines, man. Well, I guess that's how you live your life, right? Really. Now, if you don't see nothing wrong, you know what I mean? With a little illicit creep, then, yeah, you're probably golden with this. You know what I mean? So I think that's the big one, you know? Now, with this film, there's not a likable character. Like, every one of these characters are straight assholes. You know, it's like the mum. Well, I'll come back to the mum, right? But you've got the daughter, right, Katie, who is straight spoiled. You know, there's not a whole heap of gratitude. You know, when she gets her Christmas present, it's a baller present, right? First of all, she's asking, where's my big present? Like, you're too old for that shit, kid. You know what I mean? I stopped with that shit when I was like 6 or something. You know what I mean? I'm just like, yo, whatever, whatever, man. I wasn't asking for Christmas presents. It didn't really matter to me. But it's just this, she had a funky attitude. Again, same with the son. Like, the mad spoiled, right? Then you've got Alex, right? Katie's boyfriend. Who, I think straight away, you know there's something. Well, I mean, if you've read the synopsis, you're going to know what happens. But if you don't know anything, right, straight away, you know some shit's going to go down. But also, you kind of feel he's mad easy to read, right? Mad easy to read. And I think that, like, this, it sold as a comment. I didn't laugh at all throughout it, but that's fine, right? Different humor for different people, you know what I mean? That's cool. But it's just, I think it was a good job of feeling just uncomfortable with all the shit you saw, right? I felt so uncomfortable. And I don't know if that's, God, like, some of my friends down with 90 Day Fiance, and I checked out some episodes. Boy, that's a fucked up show. It's fucked up, man. That's so fucked. So I don't know if it's just the trauma of that playing with me watching this. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm not like, the characters are just horrible. It's all acted well. Here's the thing. It's acted well. But I did, there's certain things that I question, right? Firstly, if, yo, people just been having sex, right? And you literally walk in the room a second after they finished. You know what's happened in that room. You know what I mean? You know what's happened in that room. There's a funk, right? You know what's happened. You know, and there's another bit where, yo, Katie goes down on homie, and you're like, okay, you're just tasting your mum, right? And it's just like, we don't see homie get in the shower, right? And as far as we know, there's been no shower. So it's just like, firstly, you ain't gonna let her suck your dick. Because you're going to be like, yo, she's going to know. Because you're going to know, right? He wasn't strapped. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you know that something has gone down, right? So, those scenes didn't really make any sense to me, right? But, you know, in general, I thought it was an interesting look at things. Though, I would have liked to see more kind of internal narrative from Nancy, you know, because you feel that this is all springing from, like, frustration and jealousy, you know, because her ex, he's moved on with his life, right? All's going good with that. So you kind of feel that this comes from that. But we never get anything. You know, like, I think I would feel that the mum would be constantly questioning and constantly, you know, just feeling real guilty about what's going down. Right? So you'd either have the mum buying mad gifts and, you know, over the Christmas, right? Just mad shit for the daughter. Or they just would never have been that close. I don't buy someone being real close and doing that. Though, I'm not a cheater, man. I've never done it. I don't understand it. So, hey, I could be completely wrong. You know what I mean? So I think, yeah, your interpretation may come from what you've done, right? What you've done. Now, if you cheated on a friend with a friend's partner or, you know, a sibling's partner, if you've done that, you might be like, yeah, it's easy. You know what I mean? So you will definitely view this in a different way, you know? But yeah, for me, it's just like that. And the end just wasn't, it all was a bit too easy. You know? I just kind of felt more time, man. Should be more time. Think everything just went a little too, you know, just with work and just everything. It was just a bit too tied up with a bow. But it's interesting. It was definitely well filmed, right? The filming, the cinematography, you know what I mean? Just the shot, different shots we got, all of that was good, right? The acting was decent, you know? All of that was good. It was just some parts of the script that I just didn't vibe with. I just couldn't fully believe. But as I said, I think your dating experience will play into your interpretation of the film, people. Okay? Now, right? Katie's mum is having its world premiere at Dances with Films on the 2nd of July, 2:45 in the afternoon, people, right, at the TCL Chinese Theatre. So make sure you go get your tickets, you know what I mean? And yeah, people, enjoy Katie's mum. Well, I mean, don't all try and go and enjoy Katie's mum. I don't think she wants a train run on her. You feel me? You know what I mean? I think she's had a little mishap and now she's good. But yeah, go watch the film. All right, peace. Okay, so now we sit down with the director and writer of the film. So Terrell Schaffner directs and co-writes with Merrill Branch McAteen. Ugh. Yeah, I messed that up. But yes, have a great conversation, people. So yeah, let's get into it. Okay, people. So I am joined today by director Terrell Schaffner and writer Merrill Branch McTeeman. Ladies, thank you for joining me. I hope I didn't butcher your names.
You did a little. Can we tell you how it's Terrell and Merrill, actually, which is very wonderful because I have a terribly hard to pronounce name. It's Irish. And people always think I'm a guy. And now that Merrill and I have been in partnership together, I'm just like, oh, it's Terrell and Merrill. And people instantly get it. So just so you know, and Merrill, it's a Merrill Branch McTiernan. We have hard names. We have hard names.
I I am just terrible at pronunciations. It is, yeah, an embarrassment of mine. But hopefully everything else will go smoothly.
All good, all good.
All right, so we're here to talk about your film, Katie's Mum. Right, so congratulations on this project. Right, looking at all the press info, it's been in the works for a while. Yeah, so what was the thing that kind of made this come into fruition? Let's just say, like, oh, you know, what kind of coached this story out of you both?
Well, there's the story of the movie, and there's also the story of production. So maybe, Meryl, you can take the story of the movie, and I'll take the story of production.
Sounds great. So it was sparked by a breakup I had with somebody who had an affair with his girlfriend's mother long before he met me. And, you know, after that or before that as well, he always cheated on all of his girlfriends. And at the end of our relationship, he decided to be polyamorous. And, you know, I have trouble with breakups sometimes. As I was trying to process this, I started thinking about The Graduate and, you know, and what if it was the inverse? What if the right person for the younger guy was the older woman rather than the other way around, the way that we saw The Graduate? And at the time, Terrell and I were working together at a production company, and we both wanted to, we were making ACT prep videos, and we both, that wasn't really creatively fulfilling for either of us. So Terrell and I went to a movie together, and I kind of told her about this idea that was sort of half-baked, and she said that she'd always wanted to direct something, and so we decided to co-write the story, and you know, years later, that's what happened.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and I'd been directing shorts. I went to USC Film School, did a thesis film there I was really proud of, but then worked in the industry for about 10 years and really got pushed into producing. And producing is very difficult. I think that's why women end up doing it a lot. It's kind of the work that a lot of people don't want to do. And I would often produce and direct something. So I'd have to be doing two jobs at once. Mm. And I realized that it was like time to really make my mark and go for it, or I was just going to be working for other people for the rest of my life. So when I met Meryl and she had this awesome idea, it was like, all right, let's go all in on this and let's make it happen. And what I loved about the idea too is that the fireworks are between the love triangle, right? Between the mom, the boyfriend and the daughter. And most of the story we decided would take place in the house, and that would make it very producible. So using kind of my producer hat, even though I was trying to discard it, that helped us kind of come up with a plan. And then we started writing it, and we spent a long time workshopping it and writing it together. Did a lot of page one rewrites, a lot of, you know, arguing, you know, in good spirits about like what's important. Which I think made the script really strong, because we had two people, like already two brains who really loved the script, like fighting for it always, which I think was great. And then we kind of got too many locations and it got kind of out of control. And then when we decided to really make it, which was right as the pandemic started, we had like placed in the Academy's Nickel Screenplay Competition 2 years in a row as quarterfinalists, which we thought was pretty amazing for a sex comedy. It's not usually something that places in that. We decided we were really going to make it. And then we kind of pared down the locations again to make it doable.
Uh-huh. Now, do you feel that coming at direction from a producing background, like, gives you more tools? You know what I mean? Because as you said, you were looking at, you know, you had all these locations and, you know, because you've been a producer, you were able to think, all right, actually, we need to pare this back a bit. Like, if you hadn't produced, you might not have had that insight, maybe.
Totally. And I used to be, as a producer who wanted to direct, right, I was embarrassed to be a producer on a creative level, because people don't think producers are, like, creatively brilliant or anything. You know, like, they don't have that reputation. But then during the shoot, I was talking to the cinematographer, Kosh Raj, who's wonderful. And this was our first time working together. And he's just got such a beautiful eye. And he met with me for weeks before we shot. And we storyboarded the whole film using my childhood dollhouse. Whoa. We were playing with dolls. I got the idea from Judith Weston and Directing Actors, her book, which is fantastic and was my Bible during the whole process of shooting, rehearsing, shooting the film, prepping, everything. It was great. So that was her idea. And then we would take pictures. And I weirdly had like every prop we needed. Like I brought them home over Christmas, but I had like a car, I had like a cat, like it was just ridiculous. But as we were like working these things out, you know, I was talking to Akash about how I used, you know, I've been primarily a producer and how I had some kind of like shame about it. And he was like, you shouldn't be ashamed because you know what can actually be done in a day. You know what needs to happen. Like, you know, the tools that are there and then you can use your creative mind to make it happen. And so I was like, oh yeah, I have some producer director pride right now, which was probably the first time ever. And then during the shoot, it really was useful because it was like, you know, I know when we can go into overtime. I'm sure that actually irritated my producers, but you know, it was like I knowing kind of how the sausage was made, I think was actually really helpful in the end. And I think it's unusual too. Like it's happened. It happens, but it's not like actor going into directing or.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you were embarrassed by it. Like, there's, you know, I think these in creative endeavors, there's so much that goes into it. So, you know, I don't necessarily look at roles and be like, I mean, they don't do anything. But I think, is it because we never really know what producers do on films, right? You know that producers can do all of these different tasks, but it can differ from production to production. So is that a kind of a part of it, the fact that your role isn't necessarily defined for a movie or TV show, but you know all right, a director, an actor, cinematographer, you know definitely what they have done to make this happen?
I think for me, it's really like, I think great producers really support the director and they become in a lot of ways, the punching bag for the director. And like I've produced from some amazing female directors like Bridget Savage Cole, who directed Blow the Man Down, which is a great film on Amazon. I did a short for her, bunch of other female directors. And like production is so hard. And you have to kind of protect the creative voice from all of the elements coming at you. And that's how I always looked at my job as producing. But that isn't exactly, the complaint department is not the creative force of a film. And there's such different sides of your brain that I think people have a hard time believing that a producer could also be a really like inspiring creative voice because there's such different roles. So I think that's where my kind of initial defensiveness was coming from personally.
Okay. And what was it that made you think, right, that you can do a feature? And Meryl, what was it that made you think you could write a feature?
Well, I mean, I studied television, radio, and film in college, and I did write a feature in college, which, but, you know, that never saw the light of day or, you know, it's sort of on an old computer. But I've been writing a lot of television, and that is actually where my writing passion is. But when I met Terrell, you know, she had the idea that one way to break out into television is actually by making your own feature, because there's all these other there's these weird entrances, like being a writer's assistant, stuff like that. But proving that we could make something, we kind of were hoping to come in a different door. And this story didn't feel to me like a television series. Like it felt like it had a beginning and an end. So that's why I thought this was a great story for our first feature.
Okay. Oh, no, it's interesting, right? Because a lot of times people do things, you know, TV to get into film. Mm-hmm. You don't hear it the other way. Well, I made a movie to get TV stuff. But you don't really hear that. It's an interesting insight. Like, what is it about TV that kind of fascinates you on the storytelling aspect of things?
Well, for me, it's because it goes that there's no end, or there's a very far away end. And I also don't really believe that people often change in an hour and a half. And I like kind of characters who make the same mistakes in different ways over and over again, because that to me feels more like real life. And also, I'm a big reader and a fan of novels, and I also have written a couple novels. And I think that there's that richer world that you can create in television. I think we have a very rich world because we've been working on this for so long, and we have all these characters that didn't make it in. So we were able to explore beyond the, you know, 2-hour storytelling. So Katie's mom has a whole universe.
And we do see Nancy make the mistake several times. It's not just one off, and then it's just like, oh, you know, blah blah. You know, so we do, like, I think, you know, story wise, you do buy in, like, you can understand how this has all happened, especially with the setup at the beginning, you know, seeing like where she's stalking, you know, social media stalking, right? You can understand that people get into, and I think that's a big thing, right? Everyone can relate to that to some degree. You know, you've split up from someone and then you see them getting on with their life, and it's just like, what about me? Like, mm-hmm. why haven't I found my next chapter? Like, what's wrong with me? Why? Right? And I think that really then helps lead into the rest of it, because you can buy into it. I mean, you know, with your kid's partner, that I'm just like, yo, okay. But the sentiment I can get. Like, what, you know, the graduate is mentioned in the promotional material for this, right? And I guess there's so many other films where we see like an older person dating a young, well, an older guy dating a younger girl. Like, when you've watched those stories, like, what have you thought? You know what I mean? Like, because that led to this. So what was it about those stories, those portrayals, that kind of made you want to do this film?
I mean, I can talk a little. Well, so we love The Graduate, both of us. And that was one of our ways that we bonded when we met at this production company. And Meryl, one of the first times I met Meryl, she was like at the water cooler talking about how her like boyfriend was like forcing her into polyamory. So she needed to like find a new boyfriend. And I just thought that was hilarious. And we became instant friends. And we both have had, you know, questionable choice in men in the past that we're totally proud of. Like, you know, we believe that women can make decisions that aren't just based on like the smartest decision that you can make, or like, oh, I'm going to marry this great guy and everything's going to work out great. Like, it's really hard to believe that that is always how it's going to go. Mm. And so, you know, we've dated a whole panoply of men and they inspired a lot of, and I hope I said that word right. I always misread. Hope that a lot of them inspired different aspects of Alex, who we think is a guy that does something really bad, but you kind of like him and he's an interesting character. And I think all the characters are like that. But Mrs. Robinson to us was the most interesting character in The Graduate. And once she kind of leaves the love triangle in the movie, we think it like totally like loses steam. I mean, it's a masterpiece, it's a classic, but she's just such an interesting, fascinating character. So we wanted to explore that dynamic because it's so taboo versus something that you see that's so normal. And we see it all the time in Los Angeles, you know, an older guy with a younger woman. And so we wanted to look at how the opposite happens. And then what was so great about the story that Meryl had is that it's like the ultimate taboo. Like, it's a mom who loves her kids, this nurturing, loving mom who does the ultimate betrayal. Like, how the hell could that happen? And that question, I think, really guided us as we made a lot of decisions about like story math and character development. Like, just that little question that and that story, that nugget of a story, pushed us to create these characters that I think ended up all being very sympathetic. And the actors really made them, you know, come alive, and you're rooting. I like all of the characters. I even like Katie. I love Katie. And I think Julia Tolchin does an amazing job as Katie. She has a really tough job. You know, she's kind of the straight man in the movie in a lot of ways. But yeah, we wanted to just look at how that could happen and how that's like really the most extreme version of us kind of being mavericks in our own romantic life and not following the script of what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to settle down. Does that kind of describe it, Meryl? I don't know. Maybe that's my side of it, but.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was teaching undergrads last semester, intro to filmmaking, and I showed them The Graduate and they loved it, which was nice for me to see. and I asked them at the end, you know, so who thinks that Mrs. Robinson's the villain? And 100% of them raised their hands, which I thought was interesting because that's not how we see it. And I feel like in some ways this film is justice for Mrs. Robinson, because when I had these same kids watch our movie, they all love Nancy. So I think it was sort of understanding and making them a Mrs. Robinson type person bigger than, you know, the original character.
And relatable.
And relatable.
That's interesting. I mean, when I was, you know, talking about this film, I think a thing that I think came to me was relationship experience, right? I think that might play into how you take it, right? Because I've never cheated on anyone. Right. And I've never, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm with someone, I'm with that person. I'm not looking for anyone else. I'm not coveting someone's mom or anything like that. Right. But I think if you have cheated, right, and you do certain, like, you'll have a different experience watching the film. Because it's like looking at the, like, I didn't like any of these characters, though I felt sorry for Katie. Right, like I could understand the situations they were in, but yeah, there's certain things that are first, like the Christmas present. Like, man, I wanted to shake Katie. I'm like, yo, that's a great present, man. Be grateful for it. Right. You know what I mean? It's just not, like those different things, but I guess it's like who you are to how you know, relate to certain situations. But yeah, it's definitely compelling, right? And you can, as I said, you definitely see how these things happen to these people, which I think is really interesting. Like, yeah. how does that come in the writing?
Well, I think we knew that in order to make you root for Nancy, Katie had to be kind of annoying and kind of insufferable at times, which we think that she, you know, she has a transformation as well. But so, I mean, we knew that we were going to put, you know, Nancy in a, to do some pretty bad things. And so we had to make her really, really likable on every level, except for this one thing, and make Katie a little bit more complicated. And we both could also be spoiled brats to our parents. So we sort of brought some of that in there.
Yeah, my mom like always has a big present at Christmas. And it's definitely like, where's my big present? I was watching the film and was like, oh my God, Nancy is our mother. It's kind of giving me PTSD. I was like, yeah, it's like if mom hooked up with one of my worst boyfriends. But, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that because, like, you know, I've never cheated on a boyfriend and I still, like, really relate to these characters. And I think, like, I don't know if, like, Transparent, we loved Transparent. I don't, did you watch that, Kevin?
Oh, the Trimble show. Is that, was that Transparent?
It was Amazon?
It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Joey Soloway made it. You know, that show, some people are like, those kids are the worst. I can't stand any of those characters. I love those characters. And they remind me of people I know and their flaws. And, you know, I feel like with Nancy, what people do relate to her about her, regardless of, you know, whether they've done something as fucked up as what she does, is that she, like, never gives up. And that's something that I think is really easy for people to get behind as an audience and relate to. And like the first day of shooting the film, working with Dina Meyer, who's such a great actress, you know, we were shooting the bathrooms, the toilet scene, the very first scene of the movie, as the first scene of the film. And it was so hot in that bathroom and like disgusting. Like, I don't know if that was the best decision, but I wanted to make sure we found the tone of the movie on the first day. And we had done some rehearsing, which was an amazing luxury to have. But in this like, you know, stuffy ass bathroom with like the cinematographer, we ended up being in the bathroom a lot together, the three of us, me and Akash. You know, we were shooting it and we were doing these close-ups of Dina dropping the toilet and the phone. And like, I think in the like eighth take where like the assistant director was getting mad at me, you know, that I was like taking too long in this bathroom. Everyone's getting mad at me because it's disgusting in that in any bathroom for that long. Dina did this take where she just like wouldn't give up. Like there was just something, and it was, I was like, oh my God, this is like Diane Keaton. Like in any movie that she's in. And after the take, I was like, Dina, Diane Keaton. She was like, I know, Diane Keaton. And from that point forward, the thing about Nancy in every scene is she just never gives up. And I think that that is why people really like her, you know, and like they're rooting for her, even though she keeps on kind of, you know, stumbling. And then when she finally does, you know, I don't want to give it away, but like when she finally starts making some good decisions, it feels like she's really earned them. I hope.
Yeah. That first scene, I was like, yo, she didn't wash the phone. Like, oh man, that's disgusting.
That phone went through a lot.
Well, and she won't give up, but we're always throwing rocks at Nancy. Like, that is the primary humor of the movie. It's like, how many rocks can we throw at poor Nancy?
And there were more. There are scenes that got cut that were even more rocks.
Yeah.
Like, in the, you know, in the editing room, like, how was that? Like, how did you know what to cut? You know what I mean? Did it all make sense when you watched it? Or were there like some real difficult decisions that you ummed and ahed about?
Well, this whole page per minute script thing everyone talks about isn't true. Because we script, and it was 105 pages. The first cut with every scene in it was 2 hours and 45 minutes. I don't know who came up with this page per minute BS, but it's not true. So we had to cut an hour from the movie, you know, just to make it a normal movie. And obviously the first cut is always a beast. And, you know, I've directed a lot of shorts and done a 30-minute documentary. So like, I mean, I've been through the process enough, you know, to not freak out seeing a cut that long. And we had a fantastic editor, Daniel Martins. He's an editor in television. He's my neighbor. And he's just been so amazing. So, you know, he's like edited Suits, New Amsterdam, like this Brie Larson show coming out on Apple. Like he's just such a fantastic editor. So we had him, which was great. But then cutting an hour from the movie, some of it was just like tightening it up. And when we wrote the you know, the script was, it's a comedy script with elements of drama. And romance, there wasn't a lot of a description that we wrote. Like we avoided that. We had, you know, which is very much a comedy script kind of conceit. But then I think that's part of the reason it was so long, because seeing these emotional moments sometimes from actors just took a lot more time. So we had to kind of balance that. And there was a couple of scenes that just like didn't work for obvious reasons. There was like a scene at the beginning of the film where Nancy like goes to a bakery and like, you know, the bitchy women from her old social circle are like being rude to her and she stands up for herself. And it just didn't really work because Dina's so intimidating anyways. Like we kind of written Nancy to be a little bit more of a doormat than Dina, I think, could play. Dina just has this toughness to her, even when she's being really vulnerable, which she is in this movie, she's great. But the scene just didn't really work. It was trying too hard and it put it kind of more in of a like Marnie Nixon universe of tone. So that was kind of easy to get rid of. But then it was murdering after we maybe cut like three scenes, and some of Katie's scenes got cut because they weren't pushing forward Nancy's story, and Nancy's, you know, the primary POV. So those got cut pretty easily. Like they were good scenes, but they just had to go. But then it became about like murdering your babies, which was hard, I feel like. And we did some screenings in the winter for different kind of generations. There was like a boomer screening, a Gen Z screening, Gen X, millennial, to just kind of see how these people reacted to the film, and watching it with them and seeing, you know, what was working kind of helped me figure out the last couple of cuts, but it was hard. It was like scenes that were really like fun and that just weren't, they were messing up the rhythm of the movie. So right, then it was just about like preserving the rhythm. And then I don't miss any of the scenes that are gone. And I think, you know, they live on in my mind, like the characters we've killed off when we were writing, you know, this, the parallel universe of like Katie's mom, the video game or something. But yeah, so I think that's a good barometer if you made the right cuts. And like I showed the film to Dina and, you know, prepped her because some of her darlings got murdered. And at the end, she's like, I don't miss anything. I was like, yes.
And nice. I was really unhelpful because when Tara was like, oh, we need to cut more. I'm like, no, you need to put back. You need to put it all back. So, I was just not going to suggest.
I mean, it's long already. It's an hour and 50 minutes, which is very long for a comedy, but not a drama. And I think that we do straddle kind of the two, and there's a lot of characters. So hopefully we earn those minutes, but you know, we have to be careful because we're like first-time filmmakers. So we thought about that too.
Okay. There's, yeah, I didn't really think the length was an issue. You know, like, was it, you know, looking at past films of that kind of genre that kind of led to the time? Like, or, you know, could this have been a longer film?
Well... Sure. But I think we just couldn't ask people, you know, just expectations of film, first-time filmmakers. I think it, you know, it could have been if, you know, if people accepted a 2 hour and 15 minute film.
I think it works at its length. That it's that. I'm happy with its length. It's funny. Like Shiva Baby is a film that we really love that came out recently. That was an inspiration to us. And that's a female writer director. It's only like, it's so short. It's like an hour and like 7 minutes or something. I don't know. It's very short, maybe an hour or something. Like it's just, and it works so well. But you know, there's films like Moonstruck or My Best Friend's Wedding, which are also kind of films that inspired us as we were writing. And you know, I was talking about tone and directing, and those films are, I think Moonstruck is an hour and a half, but they don't really go up to 2 hours. And I think there's just something about like a delicious film. Like hopefully this is kind of a delicious film. You know, there's something a little bit frothy about it. It also pulls at the heartstrings, but I feel like you kind of start to wear out your welcome with these films if you go past 2 hours. And maybe there's exceptions, but I think you got to be just careful of kind of what it is. Like you don't want to eat too much deliciousness or something. About
that. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Have you thought about putting some of the deleted scenes on a website so people can check it out, or will they be on a DVD or anything like that?
I think they should definitely live on somewhere. We've got like five really good scenes that got cut. There's a couple we won't put on. Probably like three or bad, but there's like five good ones.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, no, I think that will, you know, I think that's always interesting. But, you know, looking at some behind the scenes stuff and, you know, how something came about and what was taken out, what was left in. Yeah, that I think that's interesting a lot of the times.
Yeah, it'd be super fun.
Like, going into this, right, because, you know, this is, 7 years? It's taken, right? What were the feelings at the start, like when you thought, right, we're gonna make this film, to then when it finished? Like, do you think you did all the things you set out to do? Did you exceed them? Like, were there things, oh, I wish I could have done that, but next time? Like, yeah, how did you feel at the beginning and how do you feel now?
I think we really got what we wanted. We got, you know, extremely lucky with the location. It's exactly what we wrote. And we met, you know, some lovely people who gave us a very good deal on the house. You know, there were times when we thought, well, are we really going to get a guest house and a pool and a Craftsman that beautiful? So that was amazing. And also the level of talent we got, I think we're really very happy about.
You know, I feel like it hasn't really settled in yet, like finishing. Like I was telling Kevin before you joined us, like it feels like we're putting on a wedding. I think I mentioned that to you last night, Meryl, because, you know, I have like a best friend from high school who's like flying to LA just to see the movie because and then flying back. And the inspiration, one of our muses for the film is flying to see the film and flying back too. Like it does feel like a like life milestone event. And I'm actually really moved that like so many people that care about me feel that way. Because it has been this like 7-year marriage, and then we've had this like child together on a virtual level. So it hasn't really settled in yet, and completely. Some of those kind of self-reflective thoughts are starting to come, and I think I'll have a clear picture of that, especially after the premiere. And then we're also going through this distribution process, so it's not really over. It's been pretty incredible. Like I feel like I wish that every filmmaker could have this experience, because it's like we had a dream, we had each other, we were the only people who believed in this dream. We worked on the script together for 5 years, workshopped it relentlessly. I was in this amazing directors collective called The Sandbox in LA, where you go to a theater and you like put up scenes in front of other directors and then with actors and you break the scene. Yeah. And so the actors leave and the directors give you notes. You get to watch other directors work. It's such a great incubator. And like, it's started by a bunch of USC alumni. I went there for undergrad. And there's like 10 features that have come out of this, of people doing the same thing that we've done. And it's just really amazing. So anyways, so that gave me a lot of confidence as a director, because one thing that's really hard about directing is you just don't do it very often. And you get better by doing it. And you get confidence by doing it. And so putting on those scenes and working with the actors and seeing what was working, I knew what the tone was, which is like one of the like really, I think, primary jobs of a director is to like execute the tone and, you know, make all the pieces come together so that the tone works. And people are like, what's the tone? What's the tone? You know, and they're always asking that because until they've seen it, it's really hard to understand. And I think now if anyone sees the trailer, they're like, oh my God, I love the tone. But we had a lot of trouble getting people to understand the tone during the development process and while we were casting. But anyways, to go onto a film set with a script that we made, we raised the money ourselves. So we were the head producers, and this confused a lot of people. Like they would go to other people that look more like an executive producer and ask some questions, and they were our employee. So, you know, it was a really amazing experience to like, just go for it, believe in a dream, build it yourself, see how many people came, like that, you know, that's cheesy, that saying, if you build it, they will come, but it was so true. And then to just build more and more momentum, it just kept on growing. Then to get there on set and to know that we have something really special, like we could tell like that something really amazing was happening. It was so hard, like indie production is so hard. But despite all those challenges, like we could feel it. And just to then execute it, I don't know, it just feels really like empowering. And I just don't know how many filmmakers get to have this experience, you know, where it's like, wow, I wanted to make this, I made it happen. This is what I wanted to make. And this is showing the world what we can do. So it's been really incredible. Like 7 years is such a long journey and there's been a lot of sacrifices along the way, but it feels really good. You know, it's going to feel great to screen it for our friends and family and have this premiere, because we just haven't shown it to a big crowd yet.
Right.
Yeah, and it's the movie we wanted to make too, which I think like Meryl and I really love My Best Friend's Wedding. Like that's one of the reasons we really bonded. We love the show Girls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Meryl, were you going to add to that?
I was just going to say, like, we spent a lot of time looking for, like, outside producers. Like, we went to Sundance 3 times trying to network with people, hoping that someone would come in and raise the money for us. And, like, in some ways, we're really happy that didn't happen, because our investors didn't have any say in the project. They gave us complete control. So we didn't – all the only sacrifices we made were sacrifices that we had decided on, not, you know, something imposed by someone else.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a great example for people, you know, because oftentimes with so many different kind of creative endeavors, right, people, you'll go to an event and, you know, it's the Q&A and people ask the question, how do I get into this industry, right? How do I get a book published? How do I get a comic published? How do I make a film? And it's like, well, go create something, right? You can write. So write something, you know, self-publish it, do something. You can do a short, like all many different lengths of sizes, you know, but you people oftentimes stop, right? They think that's too big a hill to climb. So when you see people like yourselves who go, hey, we feel we can do this thing and we're going to put everything behind it. And, you know, it takes time, right? 7 years. A lot of people go in the first, second year, be like, oh, it's not happening. All right, let's go do something else. So seeing this kind of example, it's so important, right? Because it tells people you can do anything you put your mind to, right? Put everything you have behind that thing. And it's a possibility. So, you know, whether it's girls or guys, right? Anyone can look at what you have done and be like, oh, I can take something from that. So, hey, that, you know, really pleased you're able to, you know, do this and get your project done. So congratulations, ladies.
Thank you. Yeah. And a lot of people had suggested doing like a proof of concept short, and we thought about that, but I'm kind of really happy again that we didn't, because we wouldn't have gotten the same caliber of actor or location. So we wouldn't have really been able to show our concept. It would have still cost a lot of money and been really difficult.
Mm.
Yeah. There's one really like challenging thing about filmmaking. You know, it's so expensive is one of the things that's really challenging. But also like people don't want to help you until you don't need help, which is like the most annoying thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we believed in ourselves from the beginning, and we had our own little safe space where we thought we were the shit and no one else could kind of tell us otherwise. And I think that's really important for people who, you know, have it set out for a dream. Like, you need to have allies and friends who like believe in the same things you believe in and like won't let outside interference tell you what's up. And like, at one point I was like, once the script was done, like pretty defensive that, because I thought we had something special with the script, that I was going to get removed as the director, because I had directed a lot of shorts, but I didn't have, you know, a whole set of shorts that showed this tone. But I was working on the script. This was this, you know, with Meryl, like this was the voice of the movie was the script. So that was really frustrating. I guess my point is just like, you have to find your true friends and allies and like stick together and like, you know, find your people and then like just ignore everybody else because like everybody's going to tell you, no, you can't, you need to do this. You need to do that. You need a proof of concept short. And it's like all these hurdles to what end, you know? And so for us, we're like, we're not going to do that. It's so much money. I've directed tons of shorts. Like, I know I can handle it. And then we raised the money ourselves and we did it and I could handle it. So I think like, that's another thing too, is like, don't let people put up all these, you know, hurdles in front of you, like find a way to get through all the hurdles, like ignore as many as you can, like, and just get to where you're trying to go and just ignore everybody else, I guess is the thing that I think helped us a lot through the process.
Mm. I mean, that makes sense, right? Because you look at a lot of directors and there's people who they always collaborate with, you know, like Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. Joss Whedon, right? Like Nolan, there's these people, you just think, man, they must be create such a nice dynamic that everyone wants to come back and work with them again, right? And I think it's important to have those support systems, have that group that can help drive something, because there are so many people that will go, it's not going to work. Oh, you need this and this and this. Otherwise, no one's going to be interested. Right. And it's just like, you can listen to that chatter and go, yeah, you're right. Or you can just be like, you know what? Fuck you. I don't care. You might doubt me, but I don't. So, you know, I think they're really important lessons to put out there. So, no, that's great. I think a lot of people will hear that and really take strength and, you know what I mean, go and do their own things.
And we met a lot more allies making the film too, like people that really went to bat for us, really believed in it, like the actors, you know, Aaron, Dina, Julia, they were amazing. Colin, like Jason, she had all, everybody, the actors were incredible. And we had so many great crew members too, that just like really went above and beyond their roles because they really believed in the movie. That's not like we were paying the big bucks to any of these people. So it's like our tribe grew too, which was a really like organically through this whole process. And that's been really awesome.
No, that's incredible. Like, what has this experience given you to take to the next project? Like, do you have a next project?
So I'm working on I went to Burning Man for the first time last year, which was an interesting experience that I thought I would never do. So I'm writing a script about three female friends in their 40s who reconnect while going to Burning Man for the first time, or Burning Man-esque festival.
Okay.
I think, you know, seeing a process, a project all the way through the from development to post has been really wonderful on a feature, like on a feature level as a director, and seeing how important like sequences are versus scenes, having a lot of confidence now in this tone of like comedy drama that I think people are like, we don't get it. I think now I'll be able to be like, well, just look at, you know, Katie's mom, that's the tone, and I'll get a lot of buy-in with that. So I'm excited to like use everything that I've learned through this process on the next one. Like, I'm so excited to do it all again and to have the knowledge that I have from this experience.
Oh, that's great. How about yourself, Mara?
So I actually have been working on a novel these past 3 years, and a lot of what the person I was when I started writing this novel before any of this had happened, when we just had a script, and the person I am now kind of does inform the character a little bit. Like, you know, it's just hard to walk around saying you're a writer for 18 years and then have, you know, say, well, what have you written? So to have something to point to is really nice, and will give me a lot of confidence in the future. And I'd still like to get into television. So.
I'm sure people will see this, right? This is definitely a good proof of concept, right? No, you know, I've always said, right, if people doubt you, become undeniable, right? So it's do the thing they don't think you can do. And with this, I think you've done that. So, you know, if people say you can't direct something, you can be like, yo, I did it, killed it, right? If they say you can't write something, you have this, you'd be like, listen, look, go watch the film, right? So yeah, I think getting into TV, this is the springboard. This will open up so many doors for you. Is there a certain type of show that you would like to work on?
Sort of cringy humor. You know, like the show that I like recently that came out was Bupkis with Pete Davidson. You know, a girl version of that, like Girls Transparent. That's all in my wheelhouse. That sort of thing. Something that's
the other two.
Yeah. What'd you say?
The other two.
The other two, yep.
Good one. I have not seen that one.
Oh, it's good.
Okay. Well, no, I'm sure all of that will come. So, yeah, fantastic. I know I have to let you go, but thank you very much for stopping by. I really enjoyed the conversation. Let people know how they can follow you and where they can see the film.
They can follow us on Instagram at Katie's Mom Movie, Katie's Mom Movie, I think, with underscores between the words. At this point, the only place that they can see the movie is on July 2nd at the Chinese Theater at the Dances with Films Festival. But we're hoping to get further distribution soon.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's the world premiere, right? At Dancing with Films. Fantastic.
But if people follow us on Instagram, we'll be posting updates, and there will, of course, there'll be more soon.
And katiesmom.com, we got a great website.
Fantastic. Well, all the links will be on the website. So people, make sure you go follow, follow everyone. And if you're in Hollywood, go to the Chinese Theater and check out the film. Will you both be there for a Q&A? Tremendous. So that's another reason to stop by, people.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a little reunion.
Fantastic. Well, ladies, as I said, this has been a pleasure. I hope you come by again with the next projects and we can have further conversations.
Thank you, Kevin. This has been wonderful. Thanks for your kind words about the film, and this really interesting conversation. It was fun.
Thanks so much.
No problem at all. Well, all the success and enjoy that premiere, okay? All right, take care. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Yo, interesting, right? Meryl and Terrell were very fun to talk with. So, if you find yourself in Hollywood, people, make your way to the Chinese Theater, get yourself a ticket, and go see Katie's mom, right? The ticket link is on the website. So, yeah, there you go. So that's playing Sunday the 2nd at 2:45. Remember that, people. And we have one more film to go in our Dances with Films coverage. So we will see you there. Peace.